Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, I'm Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And our guests today are Bob Wilbanks, Vice President of Sales, and Bob Wessel, Vice President of Operations from Payroll Control Systems. Thanks for being with us today, Bob.
Thanks, Tom.
Good morning.
Thanks, Tom. Good morning.
Bob, Sales Bob, can you give us, once again, just a little background on Payroll Control Systems and the scope of the services you provide?
Absolutely. Payroll Control Systems is a company that was formed back in 1995 and had our first client run payroll in 96. We currently now serve over 1,100 payroll clients in the Twin Cities and surrounding area. We actually process taxes in all 50 states. We have ancillary services that tie right into payroll, such as time and labor services, where we have several different time clock programs that can be done on the web or even with the hardware and fingerprint technology, all kinds of fun things like that. And human resources management software that helps do things like benefits enrollment. And just think about everything that's in the file cabinet on the employee. It now can be held in an electronic area where basically everybody can have access to it and you can report on it. So,
Bob Wessel, VP of Operations, also known as the General Manager. I assume you keep everything running on time. And can you tell us how long have you been with Payroll Control Systems and what are your duties?
Sure, Tom. I can certainly do that. You mentioned General Manager, Vice President of Operations. I probably wear about five other hats too. So,
janitor.
You can call me whatever you want. HR manager, if you want to call me that too. So my duties, for the most part, are to basically oversee the entire operations at Payroll Control Systems. Bob Wilbanks here, obviously, he's out in front of the customer and he's helping us to find new business. But I'm running everything that happens inside those four walls. And it's a pretty big job. It's an ever-changing industry, so it pretty much, the government keeps us on our toes. I can certainly say that. So.
And since you've gone there, our topic for today is compliance and security when it comes to your payroll systems.
I'm there for you, Tom. I tried to segue into that for you, so I'm glad that helped.
You did a good job. When we're talking about, let's talk about compliance first. When we're doing payroll, a lot of the business owners out there think about net pay, here's the checks for the people and so forth, but it really goes a lot deeper into that when you start talking about withholding and those issues.
It sure does, Tom. Compliance is a scary word, I think, for a lot of people. Compliance, penalties, government, IRS, they don't like to hear those words unless...
I think I'm going to get sick if you keep going.
Okay, well, I'll stop there then. Yeah, compliance is a pretty important thing in the payroll industry, and it's probably the biggest reason we're in business and that we're there to serve clients is the compliance aspect of it.
First thing that comes to mind when I think of compliance is how you handle employee withholdings.
And very carefully, but how we handle it, you're right, Tom, that is probably the most important thing. We process, for as Bob Wilbanks said, well over 1,100 clients, we process the payroll taxes. Which are the withholding taxes and the other employer payroll taxes that are part of that.
How many employees would that cover?
Well, in this particular case, I think we're probably going to process about 75 or 80,000 W-2s this year, just to give you a number. So.
Well, I don't want your job, Bob.
Yeah. January is a fun month for my team. So.
Let's get into the compliance issues with employee withholdings. For our listeners that aren't aware, there's Social Security, Medicare, federal withholding, state withholding, sometimes some local tax withholding.
You do your own payroll, Tom, I bet, don't you? Because you've got all the vernacular down. I'm very impressed.
We don't want our listeners to think I'm technology challenged. However, I do some things.
Not that you work hard
the old way. I love my abacus and spreadsheet, but tell me how you do it the right way, Bob.
you do it the right way by making sure that you have good internal controls in place to collect those. Well, first of all, to calculate those taxes correctly, following the federal and state tax guidelines, but then also to make sure that you're collecting and turning around and paying and recording those taxes at the predetermined deadlines for each government agency. Every state's different, Tom, and that's what makes it real tough from a compliance standpoint.
Well, we talked in a previous podcast about how you set up a new business customer and you put in all the employee information and the hourly wage and the and so forth, and you try to use as much technology as possible to make this as efficient as possible. But then when you're entering the payroll, now really the back room work starts, because you've got to calculate the, all of these Social Security and Medicare and so forth.
That's right, Tom, but that's also pretty, the software itself takes care of most of the calculations. So where the real work comes in is in the actual depositing or payment and tax filing procedures. The computer will do the work when it comes to collecting the calculating the appropriate tax, assuming the employees are set up right with the right withholding statuses and so forth.
So you have to set up the employer in terms of what his deposit requirements are.
Yes, might be. Absolutely.
Yeah. And how varied are they, Bob?
Well, 50 states, very few follow the same requirements. Some are simple enough to just say, well, do whatever the Fed says. Whatever the Fed says is due for federal withholding, that's what you can do for the state withholding. But others have a variety of deposit requirements. Some require you to pay next day. Some require you to pay next month. Some say, well, once you've withheld up to a certain dollar amount from your employees, now you got to pay in 3 days. It really varies and it changes.
So if I have employees in seven different states, this is seven different rules that we're...
It can be. And not only do you have the seven different state agencies you're dealing with for withholding tax, you've got probably seven different agencies you're dealing with for unemployment tax, some of the other employer taxes that you're responsible for, too.
So with Congress in session and the various state legislatures in session every year, do you have a person dedicated to checking out all these rules and regulations? Every time they go to work, something changes.
Mm-hmm. We have a team of tax professionals that are responsible for watching those things. We subscribe to a number of different resources, whether some are from the American Payroll Association, some are direct resources from the IRS. The great thing about technology and the internet is that information's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And between utilizing those resources and then utilizing other partners we have with CPA, partnerships we have with CPA firms or other HR-related professionals, we're able to keep up on that information.
So you're gathering and analyzing that stuff constantly, and I would guess that we've had Mike Donnelly, your Director of Information Technology, on a previous podcast. You're probably keeping him pretty busy keeping up with the changes in your software.
Yes, and we utilize a third-party vendor to help us with keeping up on the software maintenance for things like withholding table changes and so forth, but it still takes a huge effort from a team of people to make sure we're watching for every little change. This, I have never seen as many mid-year government changes as I have this year.
And that's one of the things that I think when you're with a service bureau that does the payroll and everything, that can really take care of this whole issue for you. I've got numerous stories throughout the years of people that were doing it themselves, utilizing software programs that were tried and tested and proven, like QuickBooks and so forth. But they were so busy, they never received the updates in, withheld things improperly, did things improperly throughout the entire year, not even knowing they were doing that. Because they're just not paying attention to it. It's our line of business. It's what we do. And we have the professionals there to make sure that it does get taken care of the way it's supposed to be taken care of.
Yeah, ignorance is no excuse for waiving penalties and interest, is it?
It doesn't.
The IRS doesn't think so.
If you didn't see the stop sign, do you still get the ticket?
No.
Sorry, officer. So when we're into the payroll, we're talking about the employee withholdings, and we're talking about employer contributions, and all of those things add up. They come up to about 110% of the gross pay, don't they?
You know, I'm not sure of the number, Tom, but I do know payroll. The payroll expense is the biggest or largest expense most employers have, and it's our biggest duty or one of our biggest responsibilities as a service provider is to handle those those funds and make sure they get sent out to each of those government agencies.
And what you say, you don't really know the percentage. I mean, the percentage can vary greatly by the different types of employers that are out there. You get into higher workers' comp rates on the workers' comp side. Well, the same thing can happen on unemployment. If you got high unemployment rates, it could push you all the way up to where maybe it's 120% of your actual gross pay versus the 110% if you've been minding your P's and Q's and don't have turnover.
So for a business owner, in a previous podcast, we talked about helping them through a transition, hiring an outside payroll service company. Now we talked a little bit about payroll and you automate that. We've talked about keeping track of the various tax rates of both federal and states. And then we come down to the payroll tax returns, the quarterly and annual payroll tax returns. How many of those are there and how complicated do those issues get, Bob?
There are many and they're very complicated. Many states... and the IRS as well have started to introduce electronic means for filing a lot of these returns, and so that's helped out a great amount. But not a lot of companies have who are doing payroll themselves have the ability to create those electronic returns. So it's a pretty large and varied task. And our software application, we're fortunate, it creates most of the returns. It produces most of the paper returns that may need to be filed manually, and it creates most of the electronic data that we need in order to comply with electronic requirements that some states and federal agencies have.
So your software is set up such that you can prepare the 941s for the federal tax withholding and the state withholding returns. How does it work with the state unemployment tax returns, which I assume those rates are different every state as well?
Well, and state unemployment is a good example. In Minnesota, for instance, I want to say, I don't remember how many years ago, went to an all-electronic filing requirement. So our software just generates the information that's needed for the wage detail for each employee. That's really what generates the return, and that's all filed electronically, uploaded directly to the state. And we do that with a lot of other states as well.
So you take care of the state and the federal unemployment annual report, the 940.
That's correct.
And then comes year-end time, and we talked earlier about W-2 employees and independent contractors, and there's some specific reporting requirements there as well.
Absolutely, and W-2s and 1099s, not only do they need to be generated and sent to the employee, but obviously they need to be filed with the appropriate agency as well, and we do all of that. Much of it electronically as well. All the W-2s that we file with the Fed anyway are electronic, and state of Minnesota and some other states too where we have higher volumes of activity.
Now, how detailed do you get in the reporting with the vendor integration when you're talking about 401ks and HSAs and the work comp and those type of things? Do you prepare those reports as well?
Well, we don't prepare any of the government filings for those. We leave that to the 401k administrator or the HSA or benefits plan administrator. But what we provide that I know we talked about in an earlier podcast was we provide the information in electronic format that we can send directly over to those third-party processors so that the client doesn't have to get in the middle of that.
So in the case of the 401ks, whatever the details were on how much was to be withheld, you take care of the withholding and you pay it to the 401k administrator so that it can be invested appropriately. And then at your end, you give him all the data that they need so they can report it by employee and by employer and
so
forth.
And often they're collecting that data throughout the year so they don't have to collect it at the end of the year as well. So they have that census data that's necessary for compliance testing.
How about the workers' compensation insurance? There's some annual reporting to the insurance agency or whoever's writing the insurance. How does that work with your firm?
Actually, with workers' comp, depending upon how they go about it, we actually have a pay-as-you-go workers' compensation program where we're transferring the data on a per-pay period basis right over to the insurance carriers. So they're completely up to date and they're paying as they go for whatever that premium would be for the workers' compensation. Other ways of doing that are the traditional methods where there's a down payment and maybe there's 10 other payments that are estimated throughout the year. And at that point in time, it's just important that we have the classifications on the employees in the system properly so that that annual report can be run when they want to come through and audit to make sure that the proper premiums have been paid. And it's very simple to do. One of the key things our system does, and this has impact on 401k, workers' comp, fiscal reporting. We don't have to have put everything into buckets. Most of the other systems that are out there will say, you've got to keep everything in 2008 and 2008 and everything in 2009 and 2009. Ours, you can go in and run a report for any time frame you want from the time that you're on the system. So in many cases, workers' comp is a fiscal year. You can run that report from the first payroll in July all the way to the last payroll in June of the following year without having to merge the reports together.
So on this pay-as-you-go, are you reporting to the insurance carrier at every payroll? Is that
yes.
How that works?
Yes, that's correct.
So then that need for that annual return where you report the wages throughout that period, whatever it is no longer necessary.
It goes away, and you, as you say, you pay as you go. So you're not going to overpay, and you're not going to underpay.
Just-in-time adjustments.
Right.
That works terrific. How about what assistance can you provide the employers when they're hiring people these days? There's some new rules and some new hire reporting and things involved there. Can you explain that to me?
I spent a day in a seminar on that, so I'll be interested in what that compliance and security is.
Why don't you answer the question?
No? Okay. Well, Bob, you've got about 2 minutes to explain to Sam what you learned. It took her all day to learn.
Well, if it took you 2 days, I'm wondering how deep they went. But there's two areas that we really help employers out with, and they're important. One is certainly a government requirement. It was, I think it was 1996, that as part of the Welfare Reform Act, Congress passed a requirement that all new hires are reported directly to a state repository or directory, and it's affectionately referred to as the new hire reporting law. And one of the things you have to do as an employer is report all your new hires to the state of Minnesota, for instance, or if you're in Wisconsin, to the state of Wisconsin within 20 days of hiring them, or within 20 days of hiring a rehire as well, or somebody classified as an employee who hasn't worked for you for at least 90 days. The purpose for that, of course, is to really help facilitate collection for child support, to make sure that employees who are children who are expecting or accepting child support assistance are able to get that in an expedited fashion.
Does illegal immigrants have any impact on that?
I'm not sure that it really, I don't know that it does or doesn't, but the biggest reason I believe that this law was put in place is there are a lot of people that they move around. You know, they go from job to job, they move around a lot, and the government has a hard time finding, or those child support agencies have a hard time finding these people.
So if they're trying to avoid those obligations,
yeah. I think it's safe to say, Tom, that's exactly why this was put in place. And when you're a multi-state employer, it's even more complicated because you're required generally to report those new hires to the states that those employees work in. The federal government does allow you to report all your new hires, regardless of how many states you're in, to one state that you designate if you've communicated that to the Fed.
So do you prepare this report for the business owner?
We do. We do that electronically, actually. And we do it as a
batch.
That
doesn't surprise me, Bob.
Yeah, we do it as...
Everything electronic.
Yeah, we do it as a batch. And so it's a daily occurrence for us, is we just, for all our clients, and I bet we have about a 95% adoption rate on that particular service.
Oh, I bet.
We just report all new hires to the state of Minnesota, and we continually update the federal child support agency when a company starts adding employees in a new state.
Now, do you also provide some Social Security verification for business owners?
We do, and you know, that I'll be honest, that started off more for ourselves. It's not a government requirement to do this, and I guess maybe we should step back and just explain what you're referring to. The Social Security Number Verification Service, or EVS as the Social Security Administration calls it, is really the ability to submit a name and a Social Security number to the Social Security Administration for validity.
Mm-hmm.
We really started doing it to make sure that when we were filing W-2s at the end of the year, we had accurate number names, because for years the Social Security Administration was threatening to penalize employers if they filed incorrect W-2s. So
if the employee gave you an incorrect Social Security number,
and you file
no fault of your own, and you file it that way?
Right, and so when we adopted this, when the Social Security Administration created this new online resource, we jumped on board right away. And again, it's a batch processing type of environment for us. So we'll send all new hires to the Social Security Administration for our employers, and the next day it'll return the results of those files. And if there is a name that does not match a Social Security number or an invalid Social Security number that the Social Security Administration says doesn't exist, we pass that on, that information on to the customer, and now they have the information to go find out why that doesn't match or what's going on with that particular new hire.
So you're really preventing future problems.
Absolutely,
reporting.
And reducing probably future costs associated with fixing improper W-2s and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're the general manager, so now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay. General manager hat is now on. So
put it on. We've talked in previous podcasts or alluded to a little bit internal controls and this SAS 70. What's this all about?
SAS 70. Well, I'm not going to get into a lot of the detail here, but SAS 70 or SAS 70, also referred to as Statement of Auditing, SAS Statement of Auditing Standards, Item 70 is part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. And I'm not going to get into what the whole Sarbanes-Oxley Act is, but basically SAS 70 is a guideline that was put in place by the AICPA as part of this that allows service organizations such as ours to have their internal controls audited by an independent independent agency, and thus a certified report is produced that can be shared with our clients, indicating to them what types of controls we have in place for protection of their data, for financial auditing, and for us, it's really about trust.
So it's really an independent audit of your systems to make sure that they're up to date and as accurate as possible.
Absolutely. It's an opinion. It's an unsolicited opinion from this independent auditor that says these are the controls that this service organization has in place that's protecting you from loss of data, loss of money, and for a customer, it provides them some peace of mind.
Some comfort that you're doing it right.
Absolutely.
Time from an outsider looking in, because I'm not the general manager, I'm sales, and layman's terms, it's really goes through all the processes that we have in place that are going to ensure that things happen the way they're supposed to happen. And it's audited to verify that those processes are actually occurring. And it's not just a one-time audit. They come back periodically throughout the year and surprise us with visits and make sure that we're doing what we say we do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So for your customer standpoint, it gives them some comfort that you're doing things right. And additionally, I would assume you've got some insurance and bonding in place.
Absolutely. And you know, outside of your general business insurance and business liability, there's a couple of policies that there's a couple of things that we have in place that I think are just, they're good business to have. One is an E&O or errors and omissions insurance policy. And that's really a policy that protects, you know, the employer or us against mistakes that we may make or an employee of our organization may make when processing the payroll for a customer.
So with as many customers and as many employees as you handle each year, you're handling a lot of money on behalf of these business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be done accurately and timely.
Right.
And your reporting has to be accurately and timely so that you avoid any penalties and interest on those things.
Right. The second of those, though, is more of a bonding. There are lots of different types of bonding, but in this case we're talking about a fidelity bond or a third-party bond. And a service organization like ours that's handling as much money as we're handling for our customers and responsible for turning around and paying, this third-party bond is sometimes referred to as an employee dishonesty bond as well. So this third-party bond protects against our employees stealing any customer asset or customer property. Well, in this case, it's money. So those bonds that we're talking about are important to have so that customers know that we have this additional insurance in place to protect against that.
How do you, I hate to bring it up, it's kind of a dirty word.
Sure.
But how do you deal with the term fraud? What kind of fraud protection system do you have in place?
You know what? Fraud is
and you have 2 minutes to answer.
Okay, fraud is a pretty rampant thing, but real quickly, when in terms of payroll fraud, which is really the biggest thing we're talking about here, we've seen an increase of that in the last couple of years because of the economy being what it is. There's a few things you can do. Real simply,
give me an example of payroll fraud.
Payroll fraud would be check fraud. Would be somebody who shouldn't gets a hand on an actual payroll check, a physical check, and tries to counterfeit it.
I see. Okay.
And then another type of payroll fraud would be somebody gets the banking information from a company and the bank account information and tries to do electronic fraud, tries to create an ACH of some sort or an electronic debit from that account.
To drain the funds out of the account.
Yeah. And there's two real basic things you can do to cover that are real simple you can do with any bank right away. One, it's called a debit, an ACH block and an ACH filter. A block on an account says no unauthorized electronic transfers from, no authorized or unauthorized electronic debits from this bank account. And a filter says only allow electronic debits from this bank account for these entities that we've provided access to.
So when you get into the fraud protection, then you've got systems in place to help the employer, the business owner, ensure that nobody's draining their accounts and nobody's providing false signatures on checks and those type of things.
Absolutely.
General manager, it sounds like general manager stuff. How about how do you help business owners have access to human resource assistance?
What we found is it's important to make sure that we have good strategic partners to work with in this particular case. I mean, there are an abundance of internet applications out there or internet resources for small businesses or employers to go to for help, whether it's in creating a handbook or with some employee law related questions. But we also we believe in having strong partners that we can refer our clients to in that case.
Bob, you got about 1 minute to talk to me about security issues.
Security issues above and beyond what we've already talked about.
Computer data transfer. We've talked in previous podcasts that you've got a lot of those things in place.
Most of those things that are in place are things that we discuss in our SAS 70. They're internal controls to make sure that only the right people have access to the right type of data and that files that are going in and out of the building are encrypted. I think we may have talked a little bit about that in an earlier podcast as well. Those are the types of security features we have. In addition, there's some real prudent things you can always do to make sure that when people are supposed to have access to bank accounts of clients, that you can make sure that that information is secure and can't be accessed by somebody who shouldn't have access to that.
Bob, as Vice President of Sales, all this information we've gotten from your general manager must make your job easier when you can go out and tell your business customers about all of the compliance and security safeguards in place at your company.
Absolutely. By having the SAS 70 Type 2, that really did put a big feather in our cap. And basically what it allows us to do is to work with pretty much any financial institution out there and publicly held companies and so forth. So if we're good enough to be able to work with those companies, we're generally good enough to be able to work with any of the other businesses around the Twin Cities area. We're here and ready to help.
Gentlemen, thank you. This has been an interesting discussion of compliance and security issues when it comes to the payroll service. I'd like to thank Bob Wilbanks, Vice President of Sales, and Bob Wessel, who is the General Manager at Payroll Control Systems, for being with us on this segment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.